Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather round the radio. It's time for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show, lots of good people involved. And the host of the program is Carol Marks. Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she's a champion in the battle against ageism. Let's kick this hour off now with Carol Marks in conversation with Irv Benson. He is the last surviving burlesque comic who just turned 100 years old on January 31st. And he's the subject of a new documentary titled The Last First Comic, How Burlesque Died and Irv Benson Lived to Tell It.
Now, I want to ask you a little bit first about the birth of the documentary and the new DVD of the show that's now available, because it was written and directed by John Brown and Bart Williams, fellow comedians. And you met them in Las Vegas, you all became friends, and then, after Red Buttons died in 2006, what did John Brown suddenly realize that resulted in the wonderful title for this documentary?
Yeah, I'll tell you something. The Red, there's a misapprehension about Red Buttons. He didn't spend that much time in burlesque. He was in a couple of seasons. Not like me. I spent 2,000 years, you know. But Red was in for a couple of seasons. He came around the circuit once or twice, I think. And then somebody saw him. I think it was, I forget the guy's name, but he thought he had something. And he got that he got that television series. I forget the name of it now, but and it was quite successful for a while. Then he went on to make some movies, and, of course, you know, he won an Academy Award for Sayonara, the Marlon Brando movie. And I guess he went from there, you know. What I've known Red since I was 5 years older than Red, you know. Red would have been in my birthday, January 31st. His birthday, I think, was February 5th or something like that. And he was 5 years younger than me. So that's about it, you know.
But John Brown thought that he was really, you know, that since he had died, that you were the last comic, you know, left. So that's what he thought.
Yeah.
And that's how this wonderful documentary got its title.
100 years feels the same as 99, you know. What can I tell you?
Well, you're just getting better, that's all, and younger at heart. Now, before we talk about the art form of burlesque, I wanted to ask you about your interest in performing, because doesn't it date back to your auditioning? You were only 12, and what did you do at your audition, and did you have any training in any kind of the arts, dancing?
No. When I started dancing around in amateur contests, I was about 13 years old. You know, and we found out we was what they called street corner dancers, cellar door dancers. In those days, they had cellar doors, and if you danced on a cellar door, it made a lot of noise. And finally, we found out that they were having auditions at one of the local theaters. And somebody said, "Well, you dance." I said, "Hey, what about it?" He said, "Why don't you go enter the contest?" I said, "No, I'm not good enough." I didn't know what kind of talent they needed or wanted. So I said, okay. So I went, and I won first prize. I think the first prize was $1.
That was a lot then.
Oh, yeah. That was, oh, my God, 1927. Wow.
And then you went on to do both burlesque and vaudeville. So, do people get confused about the difference between these two forms of entertainment?
Well, I never relegated myself to one medium, you know. I loved burlesque, is where I got my training. When I looked at some of these comics, and I said, oh my goodness, I said, I can do that. I said, I think I can do it better. It wasn't an ego trip or anything like that, but I said, I can do that, and I watched, and I watched, and I watched. And then somebody saw me one day, doing a bit part, something, in two shows, and he approached me and he asked me, would I be interested in going into show business? And I said, yeah, well, it sounds good, you know. And he said, I'd get in touch with you. So he sent me a letter, go and see these people in New York. I think it was the old Brill Building on 1619 Broadway. That's the home of music now, like the old Tin Pan Alley. And
right.
I went up and my they sent me a contract for $40 a week, less 5% commission. So I had a wife in New York and $38 a week to live on. So I used to send 19 home and kept 19. And in those days, a fairly decent hotel, the room was like $9-$10 a week. And the rest came naturally. Let's put it that way. Because a loaf of bread was a nickel, not $5 like today, you know.
This is true. This is so true.
Yeah, we struggled through, you know.
And, you know, and people did. And you had a real talent for doing comedy. And weren't there then usually two comedians performing together as a team? And so what role did you play? Because, you know, they must have each had a different role, right? Because you were the top and end, I think.
Well, and not at first, not at first. But I think when it came around, I think I was about one of the youngest top and adders around on the circuit in those days. And a lot of these old-timers, it wasn't a very nice medium to be in those days because the old-timers resented the young people coming in. You know, these guys that were 50, 60 years old and still laying around those dressing rooms, and they say, who's this little punk coming in here getting these laughs, you know what I mean? I didn't know too much then until somebody grabbed me and straightened me out, you know. He said, don't you worry about these people. You do what you have to do. You have a potential. So that's what I did. I kept my eyes and ears open, and I just followed the rules, that's all. And it worked out good. But I, like I say, I didn't relegate myself to burlesque only. I was in vaudeville. I did a little musical comedy. I did a couple of pictures. I lived in Las Vegas for 35 years, and I had a TV series with Milton Berle, as you know.
Yeah, and I'm going to talk about that in a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you about the most recognizable comedy team that came out of that that era, and they went on to radio and television. That was Abbott and Costello. And in your documentary, one of their daughters says their routines were written in blood. What did she mean when she said that?
Written in blood?
Yep.
Oh, I have no idea what she meant.
Well, maybe it was because they didn't change anything.
Well, a man by the name of Billy K. Wells wrote a lot of the sketches. But they were all standard sketches. And you put a different spin on them. If you had any brains, well, I hate to say these things, but I hate to blow my own horn, but some very nice things were said to me by my peers, you know? Like, one man who was a comic, a burlesque comic, he said to me one day, he said, Irv, he said, you have the best versions of scenes I have ever seen. He said, how come? I said, his name was Maxie Furman. I said, Maxie, I never let these jokes lay there like that because they were so old-fashioned and so tried. I said, I try to put a spin on them. So I used to punch them up. And he said, they're wonderful what you did with them. I said, well, thanks, Max, you know. And then when I came back from Las Vegas, we had a little hiatus, and I came back to see my family. I was talked into because I had about 6-7 weeks open. said, why don't you take a swing around the circuit with us? I said, no. I said, I think I'm going to be through with burlesque because the traveling was too hard. So, come on, take one swing. So my wife said, well, go ahead, you know. So I did. And I got to I think it was Youngstown, Ohio, and went to get paid at the end of the week. And the owner of the theater said, don't come back anymore. I said, why? What did I do wrong? He said, and like I say, I don't like to blow my own horn. But it was very nice to hear. He said, you're too good for burlesque. He said, you should be out doing something else. I said, well, thanks.
Things like that
make you feel good, you know.
That's 100-year-old burlesque comic Irv Benson in conversation with Carol Marx. And we have a lot more of that conversation coming up in just a moment here on A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups.
Did you know? An estimated 16 million Americans suffer from a chronic inflammatory facial condition called rosacea, and most of them don't know it. Often mistaken for acne, there are many signs and symptoms of rosacea besides facial redness, pimples, and visible blood vessels. Other symptoms may include burning, stinging, swelling, and even enlargement of the nose. Rosacea can also affect the eyes, causing a bloodshot appearance and irritation that could lead to vision loss. Any one of these signs and symptoms can mean rosacea, and without medical help, it can become increasingly severe and wreak havoc on your personal and professional life. Rosacea typically appears any time after age 30. So if you experience any sign of rosacea, see a dermatologist for diagnosis and treatment. Or for more information, visit the National Rosacea Society at rosacea.org.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
Continuing now with A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and let's get back to that interesting conversation between the host of our show, Carol Marx, and 100-year-old burlesque comic Irv Benson.
And I think the fact, Irv, that you were able to add new bits and pieces to the sketches that you did really resulted in your getting on Johnny Carson, and you became his favorite comic. And I never realized till I saw the documentary that he loved doing situational sketches with you. And I want to ask you, did you see a different side of Johnny Carson when you performed with him?
Oh, Johnny was he was a friend. I'll tell you why. We bailed him out of a couple of spots. The first time, here's another thing. The first time I saw Johnny Carson is my partner and I, we came into New York, into a cafe on Broadway, a big, big, beautiful cafe called the International. This was 1962. And one night after the show, a waiter came back and he said that, so Mr. Carson and Mr. McMahon outside would like you boys to come out and say hello. I said, sure, why don't we change our clothes? So we did, and we came out. First thing out of Carson's mouth, what he said to us, that's the funniest thing I ever saw in my life. I said, well, thanks, Johnny. Gee, you know, those things are good to hear. And Ed McMahon said, amen to that, you know. And Johnny said, when do you guys want to be... Johnny had just taken over the Tonight Show. He had it about 6 weeks. And he said, when do you guys want to come on my show? I said, well, make it easy on yourself. So he turned to Ed. He said, how are we doing, like, for next week or something? He said, we can squeeze a bit. And we did. And we bailed him out of a couple of spots because Johnny used to tell us I'd have my biggest problem when they sit on the couch and I ask them questions. And all they can say is, yep, nope, uh-huh.
That's not good.
Yeah. So we bailed him out. And he said to us one day, He said, no matter whatever happens, if you want to come on the show, just pick up the phone and call me. Here's my number at home. Call me at home. I said, well, that's very nice. And his brother, Dick, Dick Carson, who was directing the show, he said, what did my brother just do? Did he give you something? He said, I saw him writing something on a card. I said, yeah, he gave me his home phone. He said, his home? He said, he never does that to anybody, which was very nice, you know.
And I saw bits and pieces of some of the shows that you did on the documentary, and they were just wonderful. Now, I want to also talk to you a little bit about something that we mentioned earlier, and that was the 35 years that you spent playing a heckler on the Milton Berle show. And it was so hilarious. So what was it like working with him?
Oh, well, I'd known Milton before that, you know. And they were, from what I understand, they were, when Milton was going to do the series, the variety show, they were trying to find a guy to do the thing in the box, to heckle him. And they went through 200 guys. And finally, they're all sitting around the office. And Milton had a writer, head writer for years, Hal Collins was his name. He passed away. He was a nice fellow. And they're sitting around the office, sitting around for days. And finally, Hal Collins says, oh, my goodness. He said, I just come up with the name. Milton said, who? He said, Irv Benson. Milton said, oh, why didn't we think of it? He said, wait a minute. He said, Hal Collins said he lives in Las Vegas. Milton said, get him on the phone now. And we made the deal. He said, can you come into my office? I said, sure, when? Tomorrow afternoon, whatever it was. Who remembers? And I did, and we locked up the deal. And Bill Dana, who used to be Jose Jimenez on the Steve Allen show, was our producer. And we locked up the deal, and we went from there. And it worked out very good. And Milton was very kind. Very kind man. Overall, he was a very kind man. Took care of a lot of people financially that were friends of his mother's and father's. He kept them alive. Because I used to ask his brothers, Jack and Phil, I said, who is that man? I see him here every week. I said, what does he do? He said, oh, he was a friend of my father's, and Milton takes care of him. It's the same with that woman over there. She was a friend of my mother's, and Milton takes care of her. Of course, they have no income, you know. But
wow.
Milton was a very kind man.
Yeah,
the last thing
nice
I did was,
that.
As a matter of fact, through Florida. Milton called me one day. He said, I'm going to do a concert to it through Florida. You want to do it with me? I said, oh, I haven't worked in years, Milton. He said, yeah, come on, we'll do it, we'll have some fun. And I did, and it worked out wonderful.
And that was so nice. And one of the other things that I really enjoyed about your DVD, and people who get it will also enjoy, is that you've got 30 minutes of extra bonuses. And I love one of them. When you went to hear Frank Sinatra sing, he just left Harry James' band, and he joined Tommy Dorsey's, and it was the night that he first started with Tommy Dorsey. So what did Frank Sinatra look like way back then, and how well did he sing?
I'll tell you something. When my partner and I got through, the band closed the show, and Frank had just left Harry James's band, and Harry was a dear friend of mine. And when they came in, set up, and when they hit the downbeat, and they played one or two tunes, and finally Tommy Dorsey said, and now our new vocalist, Frank Sinatra. And my partner said, come on, you going to have something to eat? I said, yeah, wait a minute. I want to hear this kid sing. I heard him on radio, you know. Let me. And out walked this kid, Sinatra. He had plastered down, light brown hair. I think he wore a green suit on stage. The green suit, walked out, opened his mouth and sang. And I said to my partner, I said, wow, this guy's going to make $1 million. And that's about what happened, you know.
It sure
maybe
did.
Maybe a little better than $1 million. But it was, I miss the big band era. It was a wonderful, wonderful time. And
I agree. And you know, you also have a part in the part of the documentary where you filmed, which in the wonderful New York Palace Theater.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It was the most prominent vaudeville theater in the country. So what are your thoughts about this wonderful theater? And, you know, isn't it too bad that we don't have those kind of performances and we also don't have the big bands?
No. It's a sorry time to go through when they, like my wife and I would sit around and listen to some jazz in the afternoon, you know. And I say, honey, by the way, I'm married 77 years.
Wonderful.
Like my grandson says, you get less for murder.
You still got a great sense of humor.
And I said to my wife, I said, this thing should never have gone out. They should never have abolished the big bands. Because I've worked with a lot of good big bands, with the Dorsey Band, with the James Band, with Claude Thornhill and Count Basie and bands like that, you know.
But, and you know what I liked? I liked the fact that back then we could dance together with our partners. I mean, today they don't even dance together.
Yeah.
So it takes a lot of adjusting, right?
Absolutely.
For the new modern world. Now,
it's
for
a different
our listeners.
Kind of show business.
It sure is.
Oh, tremendously so. When you look around, it's, well, don't get me started on that, you know.
But you had a wonderful, wonderful life. And for
yes,
our
I
listeners.
Did. I, too bad my health isn't as good as I'd like it to be. After 100, you know, it's a crapshoot, you know.
But you're still hanging in there.
Yeah, as far as I can. The only thing is I worry about my wife, because she, as a matter of fact, as I was talking to you, her caretaker came in. We have a caretaker for my wife 7 days a week. And my wife will be 97 on Wednesday.
Fascinating conversation between Carol Marx and Irv Benson, 100 years old, a veteran of burlesque. The documentary coming out is called The Last First Comic, How Burlesque Died and Irv Benson Lived to Tell It. Want more information? Go to thelastfirstcomic.com. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray.
check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do. And I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're at the point in the program where we take a little peek behind the curtain and see what's going on in the media, as our senior correspondent Kevin Casey, who's also the vice president and executive editor of the trade publication Talkers, which serves the talk radio industry, joins us to talk a little bit about talk radio. And Kevin, I guess one of the big subjects being talked about on talk radio this past week, actually a lot more than a week, has been the revival of Cold War conversation. Sounds kind of funny hearing talk about Russia and the old Soviet countries. Pretty nostalgic, huh?
It really is, and it's unusual. In fact, if you think about it, Michael, there's a generation of young people who don't remember the Soviet Union except from history books, and on top of that, it's interesting because this is one of those topics that really crosses party lines. Democrats and Republicans, obviously, concerned about the relationship between the United States and Russia and what's going on in Western Europe. And whereas so many of the topics in recent years have been so cut and dried across party lines, this is one that crosses those.
Yeah, between that and the missing plane, we have a whole new set of subjects this past few weeks. And that, of course, is not only instigates freshness in terms of the topics on talk radio, but a challenge to a lot of the hosts, particularly the younger ones, to come up with a little bit of history that they have to learn so they're up to speed.
Very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Kevin. And those who want to know about talk radio can go to the website talkers.com and read Talkers Magazine at talkers.com. Kevin Casey, our senior correspondent, the executive editor, and vice president of Talkers Magazine. I'm Michael Harrison. We're going to be joined by Stephen J.J. Wiseman next when A Touch of Gray continues.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy and you feel fine. But that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Doesn't always cause symptoms, but it can be prevented. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor seat, and we're joined now by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman, who'll be with us for the rest of the hour. In this segment, he'll be talking with Lee Majors, best known for playing astronaut Steve Austin in The $6 Million Man and his role on The Big Valley and The Fall Guy. He's going to talk to Steve about the importance of getting a flu shot.
You know, there were a couple of things when I was reading up on you that I was startled to learn. And one is, speaking of Big Valley, is it true that you were offered the lead in Midnight Cowboy but had to turn it down because of the Big Valley?
Yeah, I had my agent had secured that audition in part for me, and we were at I remember being at the director's house. And the producers were there, and they were trying to figure out a three-picture deal, and we had it kind of hammered out. And then, you know, they had canceled the Big Valley that year, and so I was free. And then, at the last minute, I don't know why they wanted to pick up the Big Valley again for another season. ABC did, and we went to them and begged them to let us out to do this movie, but they couldn't, some way couldn't do it. So they went to New York and they auditioned a few actors and came up with John Voight, which was a good break for him.
Yeah, a good break for him. And interesting enough, in movie trivia, at that time there was rating, and Midnight Cowboy was actually rated X. It was the only X movie, rated movie, to win Best Picture. Do you ever look back either wistfully or a little, well, I would be bitter. Well, how do you look back at that?
Well, I wasn't really bitter because, you know, if you're working, that's the most wonderful thing.
Yeah.
Whether it be in television or films, and I'd done like four seasons of The Big Valley, and I was happy to do more. And if you look back over my career and his career, I've been on in your living rooms a lot more than he has, and I've probably been able to affect more people around the world by doing the television than you do in films, and so I'm happy that that worked out. It would have been I've been curious to see where my career might have gone had I done that particular film, but that's the way it is, and I'm now in my 51st year of working in the business, and I'm still working. Look forward to doing a bunch of stuff this year, so things are good.
That's great. You know, speaking of careers, you had a career decision. You played college football. Is it true you turned down an offer to an invite to the camp for the St. Louis Cardinals and decided to go to Hollywood and become an actor?
Well, I was actually, my whole thing was to be a football coach, and I played football well enough to get a scholarship to the University of Indiana. I played a couple of years there, and then I went to transferred down to Eastern Kentucky, where I finished up. But I had a severe injury, a back injury, as a junior, and it kind of put me out for a year. And
wow.
I did go back and play a little bit, but I wasn't as good as I was before, because once you get hit in the back, I mean, wanted to do a fusion, and this was 1960, and they didn't know much about fusing backs back then, you know. So I passed on it, and I've been living with it, but it hasn't bothered me until lately. I guess, you know, when you get to that 65 and older, everything starts to fall apart on you.
I'm finding that out.
Let me just tell you, during that period when I was hurt, my teammates dared me to go out for this play, try out an audition. So I thought, well, I'll do it for fun. Then I got the part, and then I realized, daggone, I got to do it. And I did this play, and all the football players came to see it, and it was called The Crucible.
Yeah.
And I was down front and center in the most dramatic part of the play, where they've come to get my wife and take her to burn her at the cross. You know, it's the Salem witch hunts. And I'm looking out in the front row, and there's all these big football players and their girlfriends, and I see these girlfriends have little tears coming down their eyes. And some of the big guys, you know, their eyes were glistening up, and I thought to myself, you know, I could do this.
So
I went on to California, and I worked as Recreation Parks Department for a year or two, and meanwhile I was doing some stunt work and some acting and taking some classes, and just got a great audition in the Big Valley with 500 people and ended up getting the role, and I haven't looked back.
So stunt guy, so you really were the fall guy. You had been a stunt man.
Yeah, I probably did over my career probably 80% of my stunts, because especially during the Big Valley, it was all horsebacking, and I used to calf rope and all kinds of stuff anyway. And I was very an athletic person, so I was able to pick up most everything. You know, you rehearse the fights and they're choreographed. And I always had a stuntman stand by me and help me with stuff if we had to do any kind of rigging and stuff. So it was all relatively safe, but I wish I'd have used him more now.
You know, one of the things that people don't recognize is, you know, we're talking about the flu, is seniors, people over 65, are at actually a higher risk of getting the flu. Is that right?
Well, yeah, you know, as you know, or maybe people don't know, is that when we get older, our immune systems get very, very weak, and they don't realize it. And as you know, just getting up in the morning is tough.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's also, you know, it's people that are 65 and older, probably a lot of them already have some chronic condition of some sort, whether it's heart disease, you know, or diabetes, or kidney disease, or cancer. And flu is very, it's especially dangerous for people with those kind of chronic conditions. So that's why I was just surprised when I started out on this thing about the flu, working with the National Council on Aging, is that, you know, every year in the United States, 9 out of 10 flu deaths occur in people 65 and older.
Wow.
Yet a third of the people that are 65 and older don't get a flu shot. They're just not aware of how important it is.
Amazing.
So I've been getting them now for the last 5 or 6 years, and it's been amazing. I was with some people, just a couple of 3 weeks ago, and I had to spend a little time with them, and one of them had the flu, and I was afraid, am I going to get it? And then, you know, because I always get it on an airplane or something, but I didn't get it. And this year, you know, I had the stronger one. You know, they have the new one that's out. It's for people 65 and older, and it's a 4-in-1. The regular flu vaccine, as I understand it, is only effective for three of the strains.
Mm-hmm.
This one adds another strain to it. So if you want a dose, you got to ask your doctor or the pharmacy if they have the extra strength one. And I just learned that, I didn't know this, but people who don't have if you haven't never had a flu shot and you can't get the stronger one and you're in this category, you know, you can take two. You may not
really
take them at the same time, but maybe a week apart. But no, that I just read that the other day, and I thought that was really amazing. I didn't know that. So a lot of people can't get the stronger dose, which is out now, but it's been going like wildfire. And mainly because, you know, I'm in Texas now, and you know, the flu season starts like in September and lasts till April.
Yeah.
But here in Texas, it hit harder than usual. I mean, we had through November, children were most impacted. But of course, lately, it shows that it has targeted, believe it or not, the 25 to 64-year-olds. So, I mean,
yeah.
every group should get the flu vaccine. This will go on through April.
And the fact that you mentioned it's going on through April, it's not too late to get that flu shot, is it?
No. And it takes about 10 days for it to go into effect. And you can't get the flu. People think you can get the flu from getting a flu shot.
Yeah, no way.
No, you can't. It just takes 10 days at least for it to build up your immunity. But you may contact somebody within that 10 days that has
right.
a cold and get a bug. naturally, but you'll think it's, oh, I got it from the flu shot, but it doesn't happen.
No. Now, there are plenty of places that give them free, but if you're 65 or older, the flu shot's also covered by Medicare, isn't it?
That's correct. That's another great thing. I'm glad you brought that up, because the annual flu shot is a Medicare Part B benefit, and it's covered with no copay at all for people 65 and older. So there's no reason for you not to get a shot. Just go in and, you know, you got to take the time to do it.
Yeah, you know, this is one of these no-brainers, although I have to admit, I was someone
and
with...
You got your sleeve.
I have, and I'll tell you, the interesting thing, Lee, is if you'd asked me 5 years ago, I would have said no, because I just was lazy and didn't bother. Then I got the flu 5 years ago, and miserable, and I said, oh, no, this isn't happening again, and I do it. But so I know the people who live by that motto, you know, never put off till tomorrow what you can put off till the day after tomorrow. But this is important stuff.
I travel a lot for work, and you're always crammed into an airplane, you know. Every time I hear some people coughing on the plane,
of course.
Oh, I'm sure glad I've got my flu shot.
Yeah.
And, you know, and naturally when I'm filming something, we work in conditions that are very tight, close quarters, and usually there's like 30 people around you, and someone definitely will have a bug. So it's in your office environments, and then, you know, and the main thing is the kids. When the little kids come to visit Grandpa, you know, they want to jump in his lap, and, you know, little kids always carry the first ones to bring the bug into the house.
Oh, yeah. You know,
coming from their school.
They get everything. I got some friends where they go to visit their grandchildren, and every time they come back with something. No, it's great. So you're feeling good. Are you feeling maybe with inflation? Are you now the $12 million man? How are you doing now?
I think they said it was around 60 million now.
Wow.
But I wish I could be rebuilt. I got a looking at a knee replacement here that I'm not looking. I don't really want to do yet. I keep putting it off because I just can't find the downtime to do it.
Well, that's a good thing too. You know, I know it's like picking out your favorite kid, but you had, and like you said, I mean, it's very unusual for someone to have one successful long running television show, and you had four. Do you have a favorite TV role?
Well, you know, I've done a total of seven.
Wow.
Some of them, well, I did a little thing called Raven over in Hawaii for 2 years. It was on a Saturday night, and when we went off the air, Walker Texas Ranger took our time slot, so that was about where it was. Chuck thanks me for that, so I gave up the time slot for him. Chuck Norris.
That was pretty nice, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, no, my favorite was probably, the most fun was Fall Guy. It was more like me as a character. And, of course, I'd have to give it a close second would be The Big Valley, because your first one is always the one you have the biggest impression and more excited about. I got to say that the $6 million was would be coming in about third. All they did was run my behind off.
And play that funny music in the background.
It was kind of just so mechanical and always doing fights or this bionic stuff. And, you know, it took them 2 years to get me a love interest, and I got tired of looking at those hairy leg guys on the crew. So that's how Lindsay Wagner got involved. I wanted the love interest, and so we wrote this episode, and that brought in the bionic woman.
That's Lee Majors in conversation with Steve Wiseman. And if you'd like more information about getting a flu shot, go to ncoa.org/flu. That's ncoa.org/flu. Steve Wiseman will join us again in just a moment talking about income tax identity theft. That's coming up next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We come to the final segment of the program and another visit from Steve Wiseman, our senior correspondent. He's an attorney, and when he's an attorney, we call him Stephen J.J. Wiseman, Esquire. He's also a prolific author, and he is an enemy of fraud. He is an enemy of scammers. And let me tell you, he's the real deal. He's a good guy. I've known him for over 20 years, and I would certainly feel safe in a foxhole with Steve Wiseman. So let me tell you now, he's here to discuss income tax identity theft, and he really knows a lot about it because he's written The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall. He has a website called scamicide.com. So let's see what he's got in store for us. Income tax identity theft. Steve, take it away.
Thank you, Michael. Want some good news or bad news? All right, I'll give you both. The good news, according to the IRS, is that their crack teams of forensic accountants prevented the payment of $1.5 billion in fraudulent tax refund checks last year. You want the bad news? Bad news is a report done by the Treasury Department predicts the IRS will pay more than $21 billion, that's with a B, billion dollars in fraudulent tax refund checks over the next 5 years. And if that's not bad enough, here's some worse news. If an identity thief manages to file a tax return using your name and Social Security number before you do, it could be well over a year before you get your legitimate tax refund. And tax identity theft is getting worse, not better. And you really can't depend on the IRS to protect you. Identity thieves who manage to steal your name and social security number are filing early returns before you can with a phony W-2 and getting huge refunds while your refund, the legitimate one, gets stuck in bureaucratic hell when you file your legitimate tax return. But let's just really look at this and make it worse, because the IRS is talking about all they're doing with new special programs to identify. Here's the key thing they're not doing, and I don't see this, you know, anywhere that it's been written. When a W-2 is sent in by an employer, not even sent to the IRS, W-2 forms aren't required to be filed by employers until February or March, depending on the manner that the employer uses for filing. In fact, as I said, it's not even filed with the IRS, but done with Social Security. Social Security doesn't even send those documents over to the IRS until the late summer, and the IRS doesn't match the W-2s filed with the W-2s filed by employers until August, well after the IRS has already paid income tax returns based, in many cases, on counterfeit W-2s. So how easy would it be to merely require employers to file W-2s with the IRS at the same time they file them with Social Security and have the IRS match the phony W-2s with the W-2s that are filed by employers and then be able to see if there's identity theft? But that's a bit too easy. The bottom line is, first of all, you've got to protect your Social Security number. Second of all, you've got to file early. The filing date was extended a little bit because of the government shutdown, but now is the time to file, so don't put it off.
Thank you, Steve Wiseman. Income tax identity theft. You don't know where to turn and where the next culprit will be. What tree the next fraud artist will jump out from behind. But Steve Wiseman is there to protect us. Check out scamaside.com, his website. Check out The Truth About Avoiding Scams, his book about the subject, published by Prentice Hall. And Steve Wiseman is a regular feature of A Touch of Gray. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Beverly Santanella, our producer on the front line. Thank you, of course, to Kevin Casey. And great thanks and respect to Carol Marks, one of America's leading experts in upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism and the host of our program. On behalf of all of us at A Touch of Gray, I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another installment